You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Right now, you can lease a 2017 Blue Cruise from only $138 bi-weekly at Lakewood Chev.
We are going to tackle some of the health. Are they myths or are they truths? Jeff Woods joins us once again. Woodsy, let's start right away with the hydration myth. Fact, 8 cups of water a day, or six to eight.
Well, that's typically, you know, what's prescribed by a lot of health professionals, to drink 6 to 8 cups of water. But honestly, Greger, there's zero evidence really that sort of states that you're any healthier than the person who doesn't drink that many cups of water. The key things to understand in my comment are this. If your energy balance is right and you're taking in the right number of fruits and vegetables, et cetera, and even if you're drinking a little coffee or tea, you are still probably appropriately hydrated. Now, of course, if you're sort of into hot weather workouts or working a laborious job of some sort, that's completely different. You know, you're going to have to take in some water to accommodate probably your sweat rate being up. And even for athletic populations, being mildly dehydrated, you know, if we were looking at scientific study, especially for anaerobic sports like sprinting or weight training, it didn't really matter. Your performance seemed to be just as good. And obviously for events lasting longer than 60 minutes and you're out in the heat and you're doing like a marathon or something like that, by all means, you have to drink water. But for the most part, it didn't seem to affect the performance as much as what we've been led to believe.
Okay, so now let's move to stretching debate, which is a big reason, right? And I guess a static stretch, obviously not ideal at times.
No, and here's the thing with static stretching, and for our listeners, we should understand that static stretching is the type that we hold for an extended period of time. And the reasons that most people stretch, Greger, are this. Number one, to reduce muscle soreness after a workout, okay? Number two, improve our performance during activity. And the third reason is reduce the risk of injury. And again, if we look at research and under scrutiny, static stretching didn't help any of those situations, like not even one bit. And in fact, it made some situations worse and more vulnerable to injury. And here's the reason why. It sort of impaired the stretch shortening cycle in muscle reaction. And all that is, like, when you do anything athletic, Greger, your muscles stretch really quick, they get long, and they contract really aggressively, they get short. So when you're stretching statically, it sort of inhibits that. So your best bet when you're going to warm up for any activity aerobically, like you should walk, run, or do some sort of rowing action, then perform like a dynamic movement that more closely mimics whatever mechanical pattern of the activity you're about to take part in. And then you're going to be fine. Static stretching is probably a better idea at the end of your activity. So after you're done doing whatever you're doing, then you can static stretch and just probably keep the stretches under 30 seconds and you're not going to mess yourself up.
What about icing? Because that probably seems to be one of the biggest debates still out there raging, although there's been a lot of change recently in viewing of how or when you should ice.
Okay, the good one. That's a good question. So here's the thing with icing. Icing actually slows down the healing process because it vasoconstricts and it limits the flow of blood nutrient back to the damaged area. Okay, so in some cases, Greger, it can actually make the tissues, the muscle tissues and the connective tissues, it can actually make them weak. Now, as your body temperature starts to heat up a little bit, you know, they'll return to their regular sort of strength and that won't be a problem. But in some cases, when we look at the research, it actually slowed the healing time down by 2 to 4 weeks if someone is like putting ice on the injury day in, day out. Now, ice works really well, Greger, if you've got acute pain at the time of the injury and you need to manage the pain in the field. It's great, but it doesn't do anything to expedite or speed up the healing whatsoever. So I would caution people to sort of maybe avoid that.
Okay. Now, the abs are a huge focus for a lot of people trying to get fit. The abdominal training myth, safe to say, like trying to focus on it, Jeff, is not probably the best way to go about building your abs?
No. Well, here's the thing, Gregor. In most cases, you know, and over the years, you know, a lot of crunches and very specific, you know, work for the core has been sort of the prescription. But crunches really don't do anything to, you know, make you leaner or you know, show your abs really well. Your best bet there, obviously, is to get your eating under control. Seeing a registered dietitian is a really good idea there so that you can learn how to eat, keep your energy balance right so that you're not carrying a lot of excess body fat, and you're going to see your abs. As far as exercises go, putting an external load on your body by virtue of doing squats and deadlifts and things like that, you would be far better served putting the stress on your core that way than just doing the crunches. And beyond that, doing those bigger movements I'm talking about, you expend more energy. So if you look at the accumulated effect of doing that type of work, you're going to expend a lot more energy, and over many workout sessions, you know, be expending the energy you need to get lean. So you're going to have, like, again, greater results doing that type of work long term than just doing crunches.
So let's say you did the squatting, the deadlift and everything, but at the end of your workout, you did an extra 10 minutes straight on abs. Would that help?
It could, but I'm telling you this, Gregor, if you did extra sets of the aforementioned squats and deadlifts, the energy cost is far more substantial.
Okay.
And if we were to put, like, measure the amount of abdominal stimulus doing the squats and deadlifts in that extra 10 minutes, just doing more of that kind of work, there's no question, hands down, you'd get greater result doing the squats and deadlifts. But, I mean, if you wanted to, I mean, just to satisfy your need, or if that's what you like to do, by all means. But there's still higher benefit in the bigger movements.
Jeff Woods from Custom Fit joins us. What about best time of the day to work out?
Well, interesting with that, and that's this whole thing, what, you know, in terms of what I'm about to say, is based on sort of your circadian rhythm. So everybody seems to have their own internal time clock when they're going to be at their best mentally and physically. So it seems by the research, again, that in the early part of the day, people are more consistent with their workouts, but because their body temperatures are down a little bit after sleeping all night long and they're not quite as alert, those people seem to be ever so slightly more injury prone. People that work out in the afternoons, for example, they tend to be at their best. Intensity seems to be up and less injury prone. Bottom line here, I mean, I would sort of advise everybody to sort of go and do whatever works for them. As long as you're being consistent with your workouts and you're not getting hurt, obviously, just go with whatever works. But again, the afternoon thing, by the research, seems to work out a little better because people are more alert.
Okay. Now, cardio versus weight training for fat loss.
All right. So this one, I know most people would probably pick cardio. But again, if we looked at the research, the weight training seems to be the area that is a little bit better. And here's why. Because weight training keeps you a little bit more metabolically active. It does more for an individual keeping lean muscle mass as you age. So that's why it keeps you a little bit more active. You're burning calories at rest a little bit more efficiently if you've got more lean muscle tissue. If you're running and doing cycling and everything else, which it's all great, you're expending lots of energy, lots of calories, but you're not necessarily doing the right things to support keeping lean muscle mass. Now, I would advise, you know, for your listeners, a nice combination of the two is really important. And the thing with weight training, even if you wanted to gain some cardiorespiratory benefits from weight training, you can manipulate, like, the amount of time between your sets and do circuits with weight training that can really get your heart rate up, and you can kill two birds with one stone that way. So that's why I like the weight training over the cardio training for that.
Okay, and last one, eating after 8 p.m. Is it as negative?
Well, here's the thing with eating after 8. The advice there is that eating late would make you gain weight, which is just, it's complete bunk, Gregor. Physiologically speaking, it doesn't matter when you eat, provided that your energy balance is right for your needs. If you're overeating, you're going to put on weight regardless of when you eat. So with that, I think I would just caution people, you should have some understanding of where you need to be as far as energy balance goes, so you don't put on weight. And mostly, Gregor, for women, for example, I'm just making a general assumption here. Again, I would have everybody see a registered dietitian to sort of outline what your specific needs are. But for women, it's probably somewhere between 1,400 to 1,800 calories daily. And for men, 1,800 to 2,200 calories daily. As long as you're not sort of going over that, you shouldn't put on weight. And whether you eat at 8 o'clock at night or not, as long as you're within that balance, you're probably going to be okay.
And obviously, you'd probably want to eat protein more than carbs later at night.
Well, you could. I mean, you're looking to have sort of a daily balance when it comes to all of this, you know, with protein, carbs, and fat. And I think for some people that are trying to lose weight, there's some research that speaks to the fact that a slightly higher protein diet might have a thermogenic effect that's positive over the long term. And all that means is that your body heat is up a little bit when you're trying to metabolize protein over fat and carbohydrates. So that can be a positive thing over the long term. But again, if you're not sure about any of these terms that I'm using or talking about, that's why I think with success in fitness and health in general, you have to dial in your nutrition. And that's where a registered dietitian, I think, is a really valuable asset in the long-term planning of your health.
One quick one from a texter here. Just wondering, do you have best exercises to strengthen lower back from Mike?
You know what? Again, you'd have to get an assessment, I think, from an exercise physiologist or a personal trainer just to see. But again, any of these big movements, Gregor, like these multi-joint, like squats and deadlifts, things like that, they tax the whole system in a way that's unified, where all the muscles are working together. I recommend that approach over doing any type of isolation movement pattern, unless you've got a really weak link. But again, it would be hard to make a generic sort of prescription, you know, in this situation about that. But typically the larger big multi-joint movements like squats and deadlifts, they hit it all, and it forces all of those muscular systems to work together. So start low with weight. You can do just even body weight doing those types of movements, and that's a great place to start. And then over time, start to add some sort of external load.
And quickly, what were the men and women calorie numbers? I know that that's obviously depends on each person, but what was the average calories for men and women?
Yeah, and it would depend on your activity level too, Gregor. Yeah. But just generally speaking, give or take a couple hundred calories, 1,400 to 1,800 calories for females, and then for men, sort of in that 1,800 to 2,200 calorie range for men.
Jeffrey, good to talk to you. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Great, Gregor. Thanks, man.